Nay, it were no snip of a squirrel he made, did for two tough rogues like Crableg and Old Gritter. The beast that did this could sling a lance good and proper.
Shielding his eyes, Clogg squinted up at the weasel, who had made it to the top of the hill.
Ahoy, Floater! Any signs of life up there?
The weasel waved his paws, wildly shouting aloud.
Captain, it's dead!
Floater came tumbling awkwardly back down the dune, flopping this way and that, hampered in his fall by the short lance through the centre of his back. The body halted its sliding descent, right in front of the captain's big wooden clogs.
Three of me best fighting beasts slain. Ah, the murdering scoundrels, whoever they are. Right, buckos, arm yourselves and take the hill. Charge!
Clog stood back, whirling his cutlass as he urged them on. The charge was not a notable success. No beast wanted to reach the top first, and there was a deal of hanging back and accidental stumbling before Clog realised what was going on. The pirate stoat did a small dance of anger, clogs clicking sharply.
You bottle-nosed bloaters, get up that hill right now, do you hear me? That's an order from your captain. Go on, charge!
They stood awkwardly about a third of the way up the dune, still unwilling to storm the hilltop. Clog unsheathed his cutlass and began bustling his way up, knocking crew members left and right as he did.
Out of me way, you mackerel-faced, milk-swigging muckheads! You're nothing but a pack of ring-tailed cowards!
As they turned to look sheepishly at him, a sea rat called Wolf screamed when a short javelin zinged out of nowhere and slammed right through his foot paw. The charge immediately deteriorated into an undignified rush down the hill. Clog followed in their rear, berating them soundly.
One little spear and you're all running about like beetles in a bucket. Oh, shame. I never thought I'd see the day a crew of mine would dash off without even seeing the enemy.
When they were a reasonable distance from the big dune, the corsairs stopped and sat down on a grassy sward. Tramon came clattering up, with Wulp limping slowly several lengths behind. The corsair captain slumped down and began emptying sand from his clogs.
Grazzle, I'm fur disappointed in you, matey. And you, dead jaw. And you, Boggs. Mateys, what are y'all afeard of? A few old sharpened wooden sticks?
Whang! A needle-pointed lance arced out of the blue summer sky, narrowly missing Tramon Clog as it pinned his coat skirt to the ground. The corsair captain leaped up as if he had been bee-stung, ripping his coat from the quivering lance in the process.
Tidal waves and typhoons! There must be a monster behind yon hill! No beast could ever lance that far.
The rout continued with Clog in the lead as they scurried back to the safety of Marshank. Behind the sand dune, Feldo lay watching over the rim at the retreating corsairs. Balor blew a long sigh of relief as he put down his javelins and thrower.
Oh, good job they never charged the belly top and stormed us. There was enough of the blighters.
Roanoke dusted sand from herself.
There certainly was. Imagine if they got past us. Our camp is only over the next hill, south and east on the cliff tops.
Celandine suddenly bounced back as if nothing had happened. Primping the lace hems of her tunic, she remarked airily.
Oh, yes. I had an idea it was. That's why I headed over this way.
Balor rolled his eyes upward in mock despair.
You dreadful little fibber, miss. You were coming this way because a band of ruffians were chasing you.
Oh, them.
Celandine tossed her tail huffily.
I knew they wouldn't get me.
Feldo turned around from the dune rim.
But how did you know?
Celandine clasped both his paws, fluttering her eyelids wildly.
Because I knew in my heart that my brave Feldo would come to my rescue. And you did.
Roanoke smiled and shook her huge head.
Come on, brave Feldo. Let's get this ruthless charmer back to camp.
Feldo felt his face burning as Celandine hung on his paws, praising him outrageously.
You're so strong, so courageous, and so accurate with your sharp little sticks. Oh, look, I pricked my paw on one.
When they had gone, Brougham emerged from hiding. He had followed Feldo with the intention of joining him, until the badger and the hare decided to help his friend. Brougham had stayed out of sight, knowing that Balor and Roanoke would have sent him packing back to camp. So he secreted himself in a clump of tall grass and watched them rescuing Celandine. Brougham had grown a lot bolder since his escape from Marshank. He admired Feldo and wanted to be like him, but he was treated as a young one in the camp. Brougham climbed the dune and peered down on the three dead corsairs, imagining himself launching lances alongside Feldo and simmering with resentment at being left out. He slid down the dune on his bottom and sat looking at the three lifeless figures. After a while, the young mouse ventured to pick up the sword which lay near Gritter. He swung it in the air, trying a few fancy strokes, an idea forming in his head as he did. There were still a good number of slaves to be freed from Marshank. Imagine the looks on the faces of Feldo, Balor and Roanoke if he, Brome, came marching back with a score or so of slaves that he had rescued. The more Brome swung the sword, the more he liked the idea. He would do it. Arming himself with the sword and a dagger from Floater's belt, he dressed himself up in an assortment of corsair gear which he took from the three bodies. Smudging up his face with a few pawfuls of dust, Brome pulled the brim of Crableg's floppy hat down at a rakish angle and set off for Fortress Marshank. Swaggering along like a villainous sea rat, he practised the brogue.
"Ha ha! I'm Bucktail, as good a matey that ever sailed the seas and plundered landlubbers! Ha ha! And ho ho!"
Chapter 23.
As Grum, Palom and Rose tugged at their neck vines, they screamed and shouted insults and threats, despite the menacing presence of the lizards who surrounded them. Martin did not waste breath on words. He fought savagely tooth and paw as the reptiles dragged him bodily towards the fire pit. The red-frilled leader stood impassively by, tongue flickering, throat pulsing, silent as the rest of his tribe. Martin drew blood from several of the beasts, kicking, butting, biting and gouging whenever he could force a movement among the swarming lizards whose bodies swamped and stifled his every attempt. The fire took off and began crackling, pale wisps of smoke rising to blend with the fetid air as hungry golden-red flames danced and flickered in the cooking pit. A piercing off-key cry rang through the marshlands. Immediately, all activity among the lizards stopped. The noise rent the still air a second time. It was not a pleasant sound. Something akin to the screech of a gate with rusty hinges, coupled with a loud gurgling ululation. The red-frilled leader's head shook from side to side, eyes flickering and filming as he hissed what appeared to be some type of warning or command. The rest of the reptiles went into swift, silent action, hustling Martin and his three friends together. They hauled the neck vines tight, securing them firmly to the stakes, so that the four captives were forced to lie with their faces in the dirt. Ferns, leafy boughs, rushes, shrubs, and all manner of vegetation were piled hurriedly on the prisoners until they were lost to view. Several lizards perched on top of the pile, stretching themselves out as if napping. Beneath the oppressive heap, Martin and his companions fought desperately for breath. A fully grown male grey heron stalked majestically into the lizard encampment, towering high over the heads of the reptiles as they stood still like statues. The warden of Marshwood Hill was an immense bird. He glared down at the lizards from his enormous height, dark pupiled, pale gold eyes, watching them from over a savage yellow pair of beak spikes. Throwing back the snake-like column of his powerful neck, he gave throat to a chilling shriek, the twin black feathers on his skull back vibrating. The dipper zoomed down from the branches of a gnarled witch elm at the edge of the clearing. It landed among the lizards perched on top of the vegetation and did an excited hop-skip dance. The grey heron moved fearlessly and fast, long black stick-like legs pounding the ground as it spread awesome silk-grey wings and charged the heap. The lizards scuttled over each other in their attempts to get out of its way, but they were flung high into the air as the heron scattered the foliage, demolishing the entire pile with wings, beak and claw-webbed feet. Martin, Rose, Grum and Palom lay exposed on the ground, writhing feebly as they pulled at the taut neck vines. The warden's dangerous amber beak clacked perilously close to their heads as he severed the vines with careless ease. He watched them for a moment until Martin's eyes opened. Leaning close, he spoke to the young mouse in a precise, clipped manner.
"Lie still. Stay there. Do not interfere. Lizards. Got to deal with them."
The warden strode a measured pace around the camp. There was complete silence. He glared at the reptiles. The lizards stood motionless, tongues in, eyes filmed over, as if completely cowed by the mad intensity of the heron's stare. Martin watched, fascinated. The whole affair was carried out in complete silence. The heron would point to the captives with its beak, then glare at the lizards. They remained motionless, regardless of whether or not he trod on heads, bodies or tails. The warden stalked about the camp, finally halting in front of the red-frilled leader. With a slow, contemptuous movement of one leg, the heron flicked the red frill over onto its back. It was obviously a challenge that the lizard leader had to accept. Wriggling upright, the red frill hissed and circled to attack. Lying between Palom and Martin, Rose watched in horror as the grey heron's beak flashed down.
Oh, how horrible!
Martin covered her eyes with his paw.
Don't look, Rose. I think I can guess what he's going to do next.
Grum turned his face aside.
Oh, dearie, I never could I be that hungry.
Palom nodded in agreement as the warden turned on another lizard.
Gaw, I never seen nothing like that. It's disgusting.
Martin shrugged.
Maybe you've forgotten, but those lizards were going to eat us. The big bird is dealing out his justice to them.
The killer's beak flashed down several more times until the warden of Marshwood Hill had taken his fill. He swallowed and gulped, then threw back his head and gave a sharp cry. It was a signal that the lizards were dismissed. They scattered into the marshes in seconds, leaving the camp deserted except for the four friends and the grey heron. Wiping his beak methodically on a grassy tussock, he strode across to them.
I am warden of Marshwood Hill. These are my marshes, and I am the only law. Lizards are lawbreakers, toads and snakes also. I do what must be done.
Martin bowed formally.
I am Martin. This is Rose, Palom and Grum. We wish to thank you for saving our lives. We are travelling through your marshes on our way to Noonvale. I was hoping you could help us with some directions.
The little dipper had landed next to Rose. She was stroking its head. The warden preened his huge downy breast a while, as if considering what Martin had said.
I know no Noonvale, but I have heard its name spoken. I will guide you through my marshes. Obey my laws or I kill you. Lawbreakers must be killed. Gather your things and follow me.
Martin picked up his sword. Grum found his ladle. Rose and the dipper found the packs. They were untouched. The lizards had not bothered with them.
Can you put out fire?
The warden pointed his beak at Palom.
I do not like fire.
The hedgehog was about to reply when Grum ambled over.
I can put them fire out, Sir Warden, or...
The mole positioned himself by the fire pit and set to work with his remarkable digging claws, shooting damp marsh earth backwards. He dug furiously. In a short time, the fire pit was reduced to a smouldering mass, covered in the earth that Grum had spread on it. The warden nodded abruptly.
I could not do that. You are a useful creature.
Grum tipped a paw to his snout.
Thank you, sir. Though you must thy own uses, I expect. Keep any lore in these your swamps.
But the warden was not listening. He was stalking off out of the camp, calling back to them.
Come, follow me. I will guide you through my marshes to the mountain. I must stay here. I am the law.
As they trekked over what appeared to be a slender trail through the wetlands, Grum whispered to Palom.
Yeah, they bird don't say much, do he?
Palom could not resist doing a comical impression of the warden. Strutting stiff-legged, he glared at Grum and spoke sharply.
I am the law. These are my marshes. I am the law.
Both the hedgehog and the mole burst into subdued chuckles. The warden turned and glared at them.
Make fun of the law and I deal with you. I am the law.
Palom and Grum froze for a moment. Then they saluted vigorously.
Yes, sir. Understood, sir.
You, me lord, sir. Poor. Good. Fine.
Martin walked along with Rose. He nodded at the little bird hopping by her side.
I see you've got a new friend, Rose. What's his name?
The mousemaid stroked the little creature's downy head.
Dipper. That's what he is, and that's what I'll call him. Martin, did you hear what the warden said? He'd guide us to the mountain. I wonder where that is.
Me too. I suppose the only way we'll find out is by following him. He seems to know the country well enough.
Oh, yes. And do you know why that is?
Martin smiled knowingly. Leaning close, he whispered into Rose's ear so that the warden could not hear.
Because he is the law.